Selby versus Joanne Barnhart.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mark Weisberg for Thomas Selby, the plaintiff, who applied for Social Security disability benefits and was denied those benefits. Mr. Selby suffers from a brain tumor that got progressively worse despite two surgeries. The first was a craniotomy, and the second was with what's called a gamma knife that involved 50 shocks of radiation. The result of this brain tumor is that he has focal seizures in his legs and arms. This prevents him from standing and walking for long periods. He has difficulties with his arms and legs. Despite these difficulties that are well documented in the medical evidence, and despite opinions from his treating physicians that he's disabled from all work, the ALJ found that he could return to his former work as a toll booth worker. There's no support for that conclusion, and it's difficult to build the bridge from the evidence to that conclusion because everything points the other way. Everything before the judge indicated that this person couldn't return to that job, and in fact, after just a 20-minute hearing, the judge himself indicated that he was going to grant the claim. All that was left to do was to write to one of the doctors who had said, this man is disabled, and clarify what he meant by disabled. Instead of writing that letter, the judge wrote a different letter and asked the doctor to explain an apparent conflict, although it's hard to see what the conflict was that the judge saw, between that doctor's opinion and another doctor's opinion. Now, the other doctor was a colleague of the first doctor, and the first doctor, rather than take issue with his colleague's opinion or discuss it, sent a copy of all of his treatment notes. He said, here's my treatment notes. Here's what I find about this individual. All of those notes show him repeatedly saying, no return to work, no return to work, weakness in his leg. One doctor's note shows that his job entails standing all the time. And although the record isn't entirely clear as to the claimant's own description of the job, the only exhibit on point seems to be indicating that it requires 8 hours of standing and 50 pounds of lifting. The judge himself limited Mr. Selby to only 20 pounds of lifting. And again, it's hard to see how he even reached that conclusion because the only evidence on point is from two of the claimant's doctors who limit him to 15 pounds of lifting. But even if we were to accept that he's capable of 20 pounds of lifting, that still doesn't explain how he's supposed to stand for 8 hours and perform his job as a toll booth worker. Now, this is a claim that was denied at the fourth step of the five-step process. And that's significant because if the judge had gotten to the fifth step, this would have been an automatic winner. At the fifth step, this claimant wins on the on what's called the grid, the vocational guidelines that the commissioners promulgated. And so it's very important to try and understand why it is he loses at the fourth step. Why it is the judge thinks he can go back to this toll booth job. In searching the decision, we find that the judge says the claimant doesn't have credibility. Why? Because of his activities of daily living. What are those activities? He visits friends two or three times a week. He washes dishes occasionally. How often? The judge didn't ask. He didn't find out what he does when he visits his friends. He doesn't ask any questions at the hearing about any of these activities of daily living or in any way indicate to the claimant that he's going to find him not credible because he visits friends and washes dishes. But then, in his decision, he finds that his testimony isn't entirely credible because of these activities. Now, that flies in the face of the decided case law from this court in the Zarosky case and a number of other cases, including Clifford. These types of minimal activities are not the type of activities that would preclude a finding of disability. And more importantly, if the judge felt that they were, he should have asked about them because the only information he has are a few lines scribbled on a form that the claimant filled out at the beginning of this process where it asks, what do you do? He filled in that he does these activities. If the judge had questions about those, he should have asked them. Instead, he indicated, hey, if the doctor writes back to me and says that disability means disability, you're paid. Those are the judge's words, you're paid. So the claimant walked out of the hearing thinking he'd won. And that was a reasonable conclusion given the fact that the tumor progressively got worse, his health condition progressively got worse, and at no point in time did anyone give an opinion that he could return to his former work as a toll booth worker. There's no support for that conclusion at all anywhere in the record. The judge made another error in that he didn't compare at step four, as he's required to do, the requirements of the toll booth worker job with the limitations that the claimant has. And that's essential to the fourth step determination. First, you have to make specific findings, and Prince reiterates that these have to be specific findings, not just a bland, generalized statement of what it is. Specific findings as to what the residual functional capacity of the claimant is, what he can still do despite his limitations, and what the requirements of the past relevant work are. The judge didn't do either of these. In particular, as regards the past relevant work, the judge didn't ask any questions about what the toll booth worker job required. There's no evidence in the record other than the one page that indicates 50 pounds of lifting and 8 hours of standing. Now, that page, unfortunately, that exhibit's missing one page, and so it's not 100% certain that he's talking about the toll booth worker job. But that has to be the job he's talking about, because the other job that he had before that was more of a computer-related job, and it doesn't make sense that it would require 8 hours of standing, whereas a toll booth worker, everyone's seen a toll booth worker, he's standing. So I think it's safe to assume that that exhibit refers to the toll booth worker job. If we don't want to make that assumption, then it's up to the judge to clarify that. It's up to the judge to ask the claimant at the hearing, gee, we're missing a page of this exhibit. What were you describing here? What did this job entail? What were the requirements? Why do you feel that you can't meet those requirements? These are standard questions at these hearings, and 20 minutes is not a standard amount of time for a hearing, unless you're going to grant it on the record, which is the indication that the judge gave at the end, and would be consistent with the fact that on the grid, this claimant wins. But the judge also didn't go into the residual functional capacity. The judge does list a lot of the medical evidence in his decision, but he doesn't explain what weight he gave to any of that evidence or how he got from that evidence, which indicated that this individual was disabled, to his conclusion that he wasn't. And if there aren't any questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Elizabeth Feer. I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this matter. And I would like to start out by saying that the claimant is not disabled because he underwent major surgery.
It's his Can you burden. Talk a little louder, please?
Certainly. The claimant's not disabled merely because he underwent major surgery. He has the burden to show that effects of that surgery or the incident that precipitated the surgery render him disabled. In this case, we have unequivocal medical evidence indicating that he improved significantly following his surgery.
Does it say that he can stand on his feet for 8 hours?
There's nothing in the record that's going to say exactly that. However,
isn't that what he is required to do at that type of job?
The DOT Dictionary of Occupational Titles describes toll booth operator as light. Light work, by definition, includes at least 6 hours.
It's light,
of standing
but doesn't
at work.
He have to stand on his feet for 8 hours to keep handing out change?
That's how he described the job as he performed it. However, as the ALJ noted in his decision, it is possible to find that a claimant can return to his prior job as it's generally performed in the national economy. The ALJ cites SSR 8261 in making that finding.
Couldn't we almost take judicial notice of that someone at a toll booth stands and takes money?
I think you can also say they sit. I've seen several toll booth operators.
What, every
sitting.
Half hour for 2 minutes?
It depends. The real issue, however, is that the DOT defines jobs, and that's one of the ways the agency can rely on a job as it's generally performed in the national
but
economy.
But I understood you to say even that indicates 6 hours of standing. Is
correct.
That
right? With 2 hours of
So your only evidence is there's 6 hours of standing.
Well, the record, the ALJ discussed the medical evidence in detail, and he came to the conclusion that nothing in that evidence says claimant's incapable of standing. In fact, as claimant describes his own impairment, he says the last treatment record that was before the ALJ in March of 99, he said he has occasional numbness in his left foot and occasional twitches in his left hand and foot. It's his burden to show that those effects rendered him incapable of working. On this record,
you're indicating there's nothing in the record, his medical testimony doesn't indicate that he couldn't stand for 6 hours.
Correct. And just to isolate a little bit of it, following the first surgery in June of 1997, Dr. DiBiase found that he was markedly improved. He had his foot drop and foot strength had been improved markedly. In July 1st, 1997, plaintiff reported to his physical therapist that he had, quote, no problems, falls, or foot drop. Plaintiff's physical therapist at that time said that he had met all his goals. 3 weeks later, he applied for disability.
Did the ALJ ever take administrative notice of the DOT or of any other vocational materials as to how the job of toll booth attendant is generally performed in the national economy?
He did not. However, he cited SSR 8261, which references the DOT. And I did not find any case law that specifically said the ALJ must specifically cite to the DOT in order to find that the claimant can perform his job as it was generally performed. Getting back to the evidence, plaintiff also reported to Dr. Merdichian in September 1997 that he was doing well and he had no other complaints, indicating that the only complaints he had were still the residual weakness and numbness in his left toes. He reported to Dr. Moeed that essentially his only problem was that he couldn't spread his last three toes and they were numb. At that time, Dr. Moeed found normal gait, normal reflexes, normal muscle tone, normal strength, normal range of motion in everything except for the toes, no muscle spasm, atrophy, or sensory deficit.
The ALJ thought that Selby's characterization of his past work was not credible, correct?
No. The ALJ, I guess you could say No, I wouldn't say he found that. He didn't account for plaintiff's past work as he performed it. If how he performed it is that page in the record, 56, that's missing the first part. But the ALJ found his allegation of total disability was not credible.
Did the ALJ anywhere give any explanation as to how he arrived at the conclusion that Mr. Selby's past work was light in exertion?
He said he referenced SSR 8261. He said as the job is generally performed in the economy, it's light in exertion. And that is true, and in fact I have the DOT definition of the job. I would just like to point out that one of Mr. Selby's reasons for not being able to perform that job is he said his ability to stand and balance was impaired. The DOT says that toll booth operator jobs don't require balancing. They don't require significant eye-hand-foot coordination, and also that they are not exposed to extreme heat or cold. So Mr. Selby still has to show that his ability to perform that job was completely hindered by his numbness. And
here's my problem. Do we know how the ALJ arrived at his conclusions that Selby was only required to perform fairly light-duty work and wasn't required to lift more than 20 pounds?
Again, Your Honor, I would say he referenced the SSR, which 8261, which deals with whether a plaintiff can return to his past relevant job as it was generally performed. It's our position that that's adequately referenced the DOT, which defines plaintiff's job as light.
But are you arguing that he accurately described the requirements of Mr. Selby's past job
as he performed it?
Mm-hmm.
No, but he doesn't have to because he can make the alternative finding that Mr. Selby could return to his work as it was generally performed. So I would like to emphasize that Mr. Selby, the record evidence unequivocally establishes that Mr. Selby significantly improved following both surgeries,
The first surgery.
The second one also. The second one, by the way, didn't occur until almost
what
a year.
What did his treating physician say?
Dr. Helenowski opined in November 1998 that plaintiff was unable to work, quote, due to his condition and his subsequent treatment. However, on the same day, Dr. Helenowski examined plaintiff and found that he only had occasional left foot alteration and sensation, and that his left leg shivered when it was cold. He said
he became stiff
in March 19. Pardon me.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
His left leg became stiff when he was shivering. Correct. He also said that plaintiff's condition was stable with no evidence of tumor progression, and that plaintiff.
March 1999. I feel that this patient is disabled from working.
March 1999? Are you referring to page 202 in the transcript?
No, I'm not referring to page 2 in the transcript.
I have.
It's 200. In March 1999, Dr. Helenowski examined Selby again.
And he found that plaintiff didn't report any new complaints. This is transcript 191 and 92. His only symptoms were occasional
twitching.
Only you
know the numbers. Only the two of you know the exact numbers.
You might be referring to appeals counsel evidence. Dr. Helenowski submitted something after the ALJ held his hearing. I thought that was March of 2000. If that is what you're referring to, it's not proper for substantial evidence review. But in summary, I would just like to emphasize that the record shows Mr. Selby improved following his surgeries to the point where his only residual problems were numbness and some weakness in his left foot, twitches in his left foot and hand, which he himself described as occasional. It's our position that he has not satisfied his burden to show that those residual effects render him disabled.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Briefly, Your Honors, as to where in the record he states that he can't return to work, it's at 173, again at 166, and then disabled from work is 202. And finally, I just want to say that the judge didn't make any determination of how the work is performed by Mr. Selby or in the national economy. He doesn't cite to the dot. And just saying there's an SSR out there isn't enough. We need to know how the judge came to this conclusion, and we don't. And for those reasons, we ask for a remand. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. We will proceed to the next case, please.